Hello and welcome to a very special bonus episode of Is This Just Fantasy, the podcast where most of the time we rate, read and review a fantasy novel, but not this time.
No, not this time. Today, your host Duncan and Geordie will be discussing who is the most badass character in fantasy literature.
I have thought about doing this episode before as a little fun bonus episode, just to sort of put all of our favourite little action figures together and just smash them into each other one at a time and see who comes out on top. But as I pitched this to Duncan, as being a good candidate for a bonus episode, I was sitting there at my laptop with a list of characters and I thought, one, I'm not sure this is actually going to be that good an episode. Like, is it really that interesting? Is this what people want from our podcast? And two, some of these people have just kind of have got hacks. Like, a bunch of these guys might not be the absolute coldest motherfucker in their book, but they can just, like, give you an aneurysm, and that feels a bit cheap.
It's that classic kind of superhero fights where you just kind of go, so who's going to win a fight? Superman. Yeah, but what if... No, Superman. Yeah, but what if they use, like, Kryptonian, and it's like Superman puts on his anti-Kryptonian suit?
Kryptonian, Duncan?
I don't know. I don't read Superman. Kryptite? Is that what it's called?
Kryptonite. What the fuck?
Thank you. Is he a Kryptonian?
That is genuinely very discrediting for a fantasy, for a, like, nerd podcast like ours.
Listen, DC, unless it's Batman, it's just not my thing.
The point being, there are people who consider it a cheap shot. You have characters like Superman who are just like, well, he's too powerful. It's not really fair to have a discussion in it. And then sometimes you've got characters like Light Yagami. Like, oh, his special ability is he can write down your name in a book and then you die. He probably goes pretty far in, like, the tourney of fantasy badasses because all he has to do is say, hey, can I write your name down and then wait 40 seconds?
So, what's a fair way of doing this, Geordie? What's your less biased approach to kind of gauging who wins out?
I think the real, you know, the gauntlet which we have to put characters through to figure out who's the most badass is we have to sort of put them through trials, you know? We have to give them things to overcome. Like, you know, Physical Asia, which I just spent all of yesterday watching. Don't get that is good television, but it's not what we're going to be talking about. It's not going to be a question of who can move the most boxes or who can wrestle over a ball. I realized the best metric to figuring out who is the greatest fantasy badass is who could help me survive a horror movie.
When you came to me with this idea, I actually thought it was absolutely brilliant because it allows you to open up the door a little bit, firstly on a wider, diverse skill set, and also it's like, we're not saying that this fantasy badass can win out any fight. We're saying is, can they actually protect other people? Do they have the skills to be the heroic badass that we love them to be?
So I've put together a series of 9 scenarios, which are basically 9 movies. We're going to nominate a series of heroes for, and we're going to see how far can they actually go. You know, can they make it from round 1 to round 9? And we'll see if anyone can do it, because, one, some of these are kind of a cheap shot, and I'm going to take people out on a technicality, but I still feel like it's a fair representation of, are you good at being a fantasy badass?
That's right. So how this is going to work is, before each round, we are going to nominate our first badass to step up to the plate. And then we shall reveal the scenario and discuss if we think it's reasonable that they'll overcome it.
And one other important candidacy is, I asked Duncan before we started the episode, what is each of this person coming in with? Like, do they have their sort of standard array of equipment? Are they at their absolute best? Are they at their, like, worst? Are they at their, like, medium? So, Duncan,
I thought long and hard about this. It's a hard one to nail down, because obviously there's so many characters that perhaps, for example, we've just come off Fourth Wing. Violet in that book has a dragon. But then you start thinking, well, she has a dragon, you know. I was thinking, well, Croker in the Black Company. He's never seen without his mercenary company. Does he get to bring the whole company with him? Where do you draw a line? So I have taken a rather hard stance and said, right, they get their standard array of equipment. No special magic they get temporarily at the end of the story, but it's something they carry with them for the majority of their book. It's fair game. And they are coming in alone. No aid, no additional assistance. I don't care it's their cute pet parrot or their cute dragon they ride upon. They're coming in solo. And that's the rule.
Now, if you want to pick the dragon, we can have a different discussion, but they may struggle to fit inside the haunted house.
Okay, Geordie, do you want to hear my first candidate?
Right. All right, let's do this. Fire away, Duncan.
I have thought long and hard, and I want to give this person just their fair representation, because in their story, they are a badass. They hold the line. They say no to injustice. They protect their own, and they fight in one of the greatest fantasy battles I have ever read. So first up to the plate, Hazel from Watership Down.
See, I genuinely, when I was putting it to bed, I was like, man, I really should include Bigwig, because he is one of the most badass characters we've done on the podcast. Like, Hazel is obviously an amazing leader. He overcomes some great stuff. If I had my way, I would have put forward Bigwig, because I think he's more badass than Hazel. You know, he's more of a tough guy. And I think he deserves to be in any discussion around which fantasy hero is the most badass. So yes, Duncan, I wholeheartedly approve of his inclusion in this. I almost wish I had done like a featherweight round to begin. But, like, who can fight Chucky? Actually, Duncan, should we... I could make it 10 rounds, and round one could be Chucky. And, because Hazel might have a shot there.
Just so that the rabbits have a chance.
Genuinely, like, and but also it's like, it's a round which almost everyone else should just be able to get past, right?
Oh, okay. Completely.
Okay, so, Duncan, I don't know how far Dear Hazel is going to get. But his opponent for round one, and he has to protect us. So Hazel has taken on the responsibility of protecting either you or me from Chucky from Child's Play.
I think Hazel has this. Hazel is clever and quick-witted. What I see this happening, this isn't a straight fight. This is Hazel leading Chucky on a merry little chase, luring him into some sort of dire mechanism that's going to burn him or crush him to death.
You know what? That's actually not unreasonable because, so, Chucky's deal is that he's like a haunted doll, like an evil ghost possesses this little doll, and it's always so, they always find like these ridiculous ways in which Chucky can, you know, draw a knife on someone and get them. I'm pretty sure his deal is that, like, he has very strong grip strength, but he's not fast. He toddles around. And that's the one place I think Hazel genuinely, you're right, could sort of lead him on a merry chase and maybe pull him into danger because he's clever and he's fast like a rabbit. He's not physically powerful enough to destroy Chucky one-on-one, but you're right, I think he probably could lure him into danger.
Round one to the rabbit.
Now, I really hate to say this, but I kind of felt like I was starting off light, but I don't really think... So round two, Duncan, is Scream. So Hazel's opponent is a teenager with a knife. You and I are in our...
Oh, Hazel's getting skinned.
We are in our house. We're in a nice... with big glass plated windows. We're making popcorn. Someone calls up the phone and says, do I like horror movies? And then a teenager with a knife bursts in, and then my pet rabbit comes to my aid, and,
yeah, at best, they buy us time, but Hazel's going down, and but to be fair, that would be, like, the most heart-wrenching opener to a Scream film.
It would really get your blood boiling if the first thing that happens in a movie is the villain busts into the room with a knife in hand. A brave rabbit launches itself across the room and then gets punted like a football.
Oh, alas, poor Hazel.
Okay, that was round two. Let's see if we can get anyone further than this.
Okay, Jordy. What is your first candidate?
I'm going to go with recency bias here. We've done them very recently. And I'm going to select Violet Soringale from Fourth Wing. As we just clarified, she will not have Eve of her dragons, but she is going to have her knives. She's going to have her dragon armor and, you know, her magic powers.
Yeah.
Round one, I don't think she's going to struggle with Chucky, right?
Absolutely not.
A chance she might underestimate him. Maybe she's getting like stabbed in the leg, but that's what dragon armor is for, you know?
Completely. I see her. If she recognizes the threat, this is just one lightning spell to a melted pile of plastic.
The lightning spell really is the thing, because I think Chucky's one of those characters who can like survive a lot of damage. It feels like it should like take him out of the picture because he's like a ghost. But I really feel like the lightning spell is going to do it. Now, I guess something that we should be assessing here is our hero capable of recognizing the threat? But I think Violet is definitely a character who is like smart enough to be like, okay, there's something really creepy about this doll and I'm very suspicious of it, and not allowing it to like sneak up on her or drop a cinder block on her head or something.
Oh, I fully agree. I really feel like this is an easy win for Violet.
Round two then. Scream. We're making popcorn. We get a phone call. A teenager in a mask busts in with a knife.
Violet's in her element. She spends most of her book fighting teenagers with knives.
Exactly, yes. And this guy has not gone to special school. He's just... Actually, I was about to spoil... I guess I'm going to have to spoil some horror movies. That's fine. This guy is literally Shaggy from... the Scooby-Doo movie. She can take care of Shaggy.
This is fine. She doesn't even use lightning for this one. She just goes at him with her knife. There's a brief fight.
Yeah.
And then she stabs him to death. Done.
Actually, well, here's one thing. So Violet is obviously extremely reticent to actually kill people. And we should use this against her, right? We can't just say she's gonna just kill people who come at her. She probably isn't actually going to do that. So if she's going to fight to subdue, and that is a problem, then I think that's going to be held against her. She should be, you know, holding things back to begin with. And she should only kill people if she's, like, forced to do it. And this should apply to our other heroes as well.
Are you saying that in her reluctance to murder a simple teenager, she may get the drop on her?
No. I'm not saying that at all. I still think she's gonna take care of this because, again, she could knock out Shaggy. It might be a detriment in future rounds, is all.
I'll accept that, but what will those future rounds be? How are we escalating this, Jordy?
Stepping up, round three is Halloween. Mike Myers is coming after us. We're hanging up our washing line. There's a guy in a mask standing outside. There's extremely creepy music playing. And our friend who's around for Halloween with us, Violet Soringale, says, that's weird. I don't like that at all. Michael Myers is coming for us in our house on Halloween. Can Violet protect us?
This is a tough one because, I'll be honest, the strength level of Michael Myers is highly variable because he's been set
that's
on fire
true.
And walks away from it. You know, even a full lightning spell Does that actually knock him out? Does that send him to the hospital bed just to get up an hour later?
So, right. So here's the question of what counts as surviving Halloween. Because Michael Myers' whole thing is that you literally can't kill him. He's a very, very strong man, but not like... Okay, he's definitely superhuman, but he's not like a superhero. He's not throw a car around. He'll break through a door. He'll survive something being crushed. He'll, like, break a man's arm just by squeezing. I think what has to count as surviving the horror movie, not necessarily defeating the main bad guy, is you make it through Halloween, right?
Here's
the thing.
You
have to make it from... Yes.
I know that Violet would survive a Halloween film. Like, that's going to happen.
Yes.
She's going to be the strong heroine at the end of the movie who gets away. I'm just curious whether or not we survive it with her.
That's the metric. She has to protect us. Like, for all characters here who are literally invulnerable, that we've covered, like, a stab wound will mean nothing to them. But if they can't protect us from Michael Myers, that's the metric they have not completed. So can Violet protect us from Michael Myers? Until dawn. She has to make it to the end of Halloween 2.
See, Geordie, I'm not sure about this. I feel like if she had her dragons, there'd be a chance. A bit of time stop magic, some last minute saves. But Violet, in Fourth Wing, tries to protect some of her classmates. And she does not succeed.
That is true. She fails to defend them from dragon attacks.
I don't know.
My opinion is, and granted, I haven't seen all of the Halloween movies, I think sequential lightning blasts are going to put Michael Myers out of commission for a bit. Like, the end of Halloween 2, he gets set on fire, he collapses, and yes, he does get back up to have come back for, like, the third Halloween movie.
Fourth.
Oh, wait, no, the fourth Halloween movie, because he's not in the third Halloween movie. Which is the one where it's, like, an evil pumpkin?
That's the third one.
Right. Season of the Witch? Slightly, is that it?
Yeah, it's something about, like, they wear, like, possessed or... Yeah, it's, like, possessed Halloween masks that have a little bit of, like, Stonehenge into them. And then there's going to be a TV broadcast, which is going to make the mask activate and kill all the children. It's bloody weird.
That's so good.
You think she can do it, though? You reckon success?
I think she can do it.
We'll survive the first Halloween. Who knows what happens the next year? But that first year, we're good.
Are you happy with this, Duncan? I've got to say, I think you should let this one slide because I don't think she's making it all the way to the end of the rounds.
Very well. She can go four through this one.
Number four. Now, I'm going to need your help with this one because I put it down because it felt like an obvious challenge. But you might need to help me with this one because I actually haven't seen it. I've put Saw as the next round. We are locked in a room with Violet Sorengale and a presumably dead guy. And we need to make it through the Saw trap room.
Okay, so there's a lot of ways to break it down with Saw. Because you've got kind of the original Saw scenario, which is just you're chained up in a room. And the only way to escape is you've got to have what it takes to cut off one of your own limbs. That's how you get out of Saw 1. There are way more elaborate traps going forward, but the question at play here is, does Violet have the capacity to maim themselves horribly to escape a trap? And do they have the capacity to protect us as well? So either they can overcome the mechanisms, or they need to grit their teeth and cut off their own limb.
Or make us cut off our own limb. Like, if a character came into this with, like, mind control powers and can make us do it, and helped us make it through to the end of Saw 1, that would count as a win in my book.
Yes, that would. Do you know what? If they can cut off their own limb, come over, and then cut off one of our limbs, and they have what it takes to do that, that grit.
Wait, we both have to chop off our arms? I haven't seen Saw.
Could cut off your legs in the first one.
No!
Your ankle has been chained to the wall. If you want out, you have to cut your foot off.
So one person is tied by the arm, and the other person by the foot?
I think they're both by the foot.
Okay, so there's no arms involved. Because I'm going to say, one of my characters is missing an arm. And I was like, either he's getting really lucky because he doesn't have to be chained by the arm, or he's really out of luck because now he's going to have no arms at the end of this and he's not making it through the last round.
No, it's definitely the legs in the first one. That's okay, the most right. basic trap.
All right.
So, does Violet have what it takes to cut off her foot?
Or make it out of a trap without chopping off her foot, right? Because I've got to say, I feel like there's a chance Violet can, by technicality, get through this because she has those hypermobile limbs, right? So maybe she can just, like, twist her ankle out of the handcuffs.
There is an instant in, I'm going to say it was Saw 3 or 4, where someone does get out of the same scenario, not by cutting off their foot, but by like taking the lid off a toilet and just smashing their ankle and then working it out.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yes, as much as cutting off your limb is like the test of grit, if a character literally has the ability to like break the shackles, obviously he can just break the shackles, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so if Violet has the ability to just squeeze her way out of the shackle, then yeah, she can do that.
I'm going to say it's a really close one, but I think Violet, and as we see throughout her story, she is so willing to put herself through pain and discomfort in that single-minded pursuit of achieving her kind of dreams. And the fact that a lot of times she puts herself in danger and other people have to be like, Violet, no, calm down.
That's true.
I think she's got what it takes in her mindset to get through this trap.
But is she getting us out of it?
Is Violet going to get us out of it? That's a good question.
Would Violet chop off your leg, Duncan? I don't know why it's your leg. I might be in this trap too.
She doesn't like to hurt her friends. She doesn't like to hurt other people.
I feel like I need to ask someone who's been through more of these books than us. Hang on, I'm gonna get my girlfriend in here. I'm gonna say, the technicality here is... the problem is that, like, I feel like... we could just say she lightning blasts the wall the chain's attached to. That would do it. But then, it's a metal chain, right? We're gonna get electrocuted.
Yes. I think we're not getting out of this one. I don't think Violet's got what it takes.
I mean, I kind of feel like you're right. I don't think Violet could chop it off. What happens at the end of Saw if they don't do it? Do they just starve to death?
That's the solution. In just to give you a bit of Saw background. So the original guy who sets up the traps, he leaves them to just... he's like, it's done. He literally seals the room and walks away. They don't end up actually starving to death. One of his progenies comes back and like strangles them out of like a mercy killing.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's
Jesus.
Yeah, it turns out horror films dark.
Man, this is a messed up movie.
But I think this is where Violet falls down. We've got to move on to our next one.
Okay. All right. But if Lauren comes back later and says, oh no, like Violet does chop off someone's arm in the third book, then we're coming back and she's carrying on from there. Okay.
Right. I'm going to escalate this now. I need to throw in someone who I'm like, this guy's going to make it.
Is it Conan?
No, Geordie, I'm not that predictable yet. I've got someone who... I don't think you spent nearly as much time as him as I have. Who... maybe the heroic moniker doesn't always earn. But who I think has got the grit and the badassery to see himself and hopefully us, fingers crossed us, through a lot of this. And that is from Joe Abercrombie's first law, Logan Ninefingers.
Sure, yeah, definitely a badass. You know, and I think, not like supernaturally strong, but this is like a really, really tough guy. He's a mean bastard. I've only experienced him in one book. You've been with him a lot longer. But from what I've seen of him, yeah, I think he's going to make it pretty far. Can Logan Ninefingers defeat Chucky?
Yes, moving on.
He can just pick him up, twist his head off. Easy. Can he defeat a teenager with a knife in Scream?
Pick him up, twist his head off. Move on.
I argue. This one could be up in the air.
No, it cannot. Michael Myers. Logan will destroy this man.
Now, Duncan, you're going to have to convince me here, right? Logan Ninefingers, obviously, real badass guy. What's he coming into this with? Like, what's his gear? Like, suit of armor, sword, shield?
I would say it's he's going to go quite light armor. He doesn't wear full chainmail an awful lot. It's normally a sort of hard leather approach. And he has a sword and shield.
Now, I feel like the shield is going to be very helpful here. It's going to give him a major advantage over the whole Bowie knife situation. There's just one problem. If you stab Michael Myers a bunch, he doesn't die.
No, but if you behead him, he definitely does. As seen
in Saw. Can you behead Michael Myers?
7 H2O. Have you ever seen Saw? Not Saw. Did I say Saw? Halloween. Halloween 7 H2O.
Is the tagline for Halloween 7 H2O?
Yeah, it was Halloween 20 years later.
Why is it called H2O?
Because it's H20.
Oh, Halloween 20. I thought it was like, yeah, it was Halloween. H2O, just add water. Michael Myers versus the mermaids.
So I reckon Logan's going into this. He is swinging. When the bloody nine comes through Logan, he's just going to start cutting off limbs.
Michael Myers is supernaturally strong, right? Like, he's much stronger than a normal man.
True, but so is the bloody nine, and when his limbs come off, his limbs are off. I also point out that Logan goes up against the, like, vampiric flesh eaters.
That's true. Okay, fair enough. If that's the case, and I obviously haven't seen him do that, those guys are probably physically stronger than Michael Myers. Like, in Best Served Cold, one of those guys inserts his finger into a man's skull.
But then we get to Saw.
Now, I feel like this is the easiest one so far, but yes, Logan Ninefingers is either, one, going to just rip the chain out of a wall, and he would have no problem chopping off our leg.
Nope.
And if he had to do it, he'd probably chop off his own arm.
Yeah, I think so. I think this man's just enough of a bit of a mad bastard. He does not care.
I have to say, Duncan, I feel like if I had known that the whole premise of surviving the Saw round was chopping off your own arm, I would have simplified it and just made it 127 hours.
To be fair, the point of this, I guess, is that this all Saw is based on the same principle, that you're in some horrific trap and you have to maim yourself in some way to progress, and it just gets progressively weird and gross.
Okay, he's made it through the round. We've gone to round 5. This one, we're changing the metric. Also, not a movie, but whatever. It's The Walking Dead.
Oh yeah, but that's just any Romero zombie film. That's Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead.
Yes. The important thing is that the metric for success in this one is he's going to take us from A to B. We're going to start in Atlanta, Georgia, and we have to make it to Washington, D.C.
I think Logan has some good precedent for this. Red Country is the story of him protecting his, you know, sort of adopted daughter on a very hostile cross-country trip.
I'm going to say, I feel like the phrase adopted daughter cross-country trip is going to be mentioned numerous times in this episode.
I was saying, I think he's got this. I think, you know, we're talking slow-walking zombies. He has no problem slashing them. He has got good survival skills. If anything, yep. I actively want to see this story.
I'm with you, man. Like, and you pointed out Red Country. Not only do we know that he's physically capable of doing a long trip, looking after someone on the way, but he can also look after us. You know? He's going to find us food and water. He's going to make sure we don't get too cold at night. And he can for sure help us outwalk the zombies. And to give him the help, we will be there. We can tell him what the rules of zombies are, about getting bit, about getting gore in him and stuff. So we'll give him that. No one's going to just stumble into, oh, they didn't know what a zombie was, so they get bit.
That's why we're there. We're there to, you know, advise and be like, guys, don't worry. I've seen this film. This is what you got to do.
I think we're making it. And I don't think we're making it. It's going to be that hard. The one thing he has against him is that it would be really useful if he knew how to drive, and obviously he doesn't know how to do that.
Hey, again, that's why we're there.
Well, I can't drive, but yeah, maybe you're making it to DC and I'm not.
I'll just get there a lot quicker than you.
Okay, I agree. Out of the suburbs. I think he's making it through the George Romero Walking Dead round.
Okay.
Now this one, this is doing great. He's making it really far. Round 6. The Reef.
Ooh.
Now, Duncan, we're on a boat with Logan Ninefingers. We're on a fishing trip or whatever. The boat capsizes or gets smashed on a rock or something. We're floating out in the water on timberwood. And the water is full of very hungry sharks. We have to survive either by getting to land or by waiting long enough for search and rescue to send a helicopter.
Okay.
So let's say, and it's a day. Like, we have to make it till dawn.
So, let's look at Logan. Swimming. far as I'm aware,
can he swim?
At no point does Logan swim through like open waters. He does on multiple occasions though end up getting thrown into rivers and having to survive going down sort of white water rapids. And he survives.
That's great.
That's pretty
that's half a challenge.
I think, you know, I think that he's got enough competency and buoyancy now.
And you've said he's wearing like hard leathers and he has a shield. Now, shield obviously not going to help him against sharks, but it might help him float. Hard leathers, he can probably swim in there.
I think so. I think he's got some chances here.
He's got a sword that could help a bit against sharks.
Yep, I think he could stab them off. He's got, I think, some of the fairest odds. He's not the most powerful swimmer. I don't think so. Like I said, we never see him do long distance swimming, but he can stay up. He can stay afloat. He's got the attitude. He doesn't. He'll certainly bonk a shark on the nose. You can see that. I don't think he's even going to bother using his sword. He strikes me the type of character that's just going to wait for a shark to come near, smash on the nose, thumb in the eye, and then like send them on their way. Take a bite out of them.
Before we go any further, Duncan, Lauren has just arrived. Lauren, I have a very important question for you. Please come stand close to the microphone. Duncan and I are doing a very serious and important episode of a podcast, okay? You can talk.
Okay.
We're doing which fantasy heroes, please face towards the mic, which fantasy heroes can survive a horror movie? Do you think that if Violet Sorengale was trapped in the Saw trap from Saw 1 with either Duncan or I, she'll be willing to chop either her own or our arm off to survive? You've read more of these books than us.
I think she would be prepared to chop off her own arm if they thought magic could grow it back. But I also think because she's the most special and important and interesting girl in the world, they'd all be volunteering to let her chop their arm off. And I think that's how it would go.
Do you think, would Violet chop off a friend's arm to save them? Because I feel we're thinking she couldn't bring herself to do that.
No, I think she could. And she'd feel bad about it, but she's the most special and important and interesting girl in the world, so she'd get over it.
Thank you.
Okay.
You've helped very much.
Thank you very much there,
okay,
Lauren.
We've had a ruling from the experts. The referee has come in. We will revisit Violet and see how far she makes it. But let's finish with Logan first.
So, I'm saying Logan makes it through the reef.
Do we make it through the reef? Because we're on that boat.
I think we do. I think Logan's a good get-on-my-back kind of guy in this scenario.
But hang on. He's a bit of a bastard, though. Would he actually save us?
I think so. I don't think this is where he's going to fall down. I think he's going to make such a mess of this that the sharks are just not going to come near him and us by extension. I don't think he's going to strike off on his own and leave us.
Okay, you know this guy more than I do. I have my doubts about this. I think we're being a little bit generous, but I'm only saying it because I know he's not making it through the next round.
I have similar thoughts. Jordy, what's the next round?
The next round is The Shining.
We're dead.
Logan Ninefingers and us have been... We're looking after the Overlook Hotel. We have to make it through the winter. And all of the ghosts in the hotel are trying to make Logan Ninefingers murder us.
Yeah. We're like night one, maybe night two if we're lucky. The Bloody Nine is coming out and he is going to smash our heads open like melons. It's going to be horrific. In fact, genuinely, I don't think there's anything in that hotel that you see in The Shining that would be scarier or more threatening than the Bloody Nine coming after you down the corridors. We've brought something worse into the hotel than the hotel actually had to throw at us.
Yeah, the hotel's going to be like, oh my god, what the hell happened?
The hotel's going to be like, we weren't even trying. We were just at the would you like a drink stage.
Okay, so there we go. We made it to round 7. A commendable job. He's flown through the rounds comparatively. Let's see if anyone can make it past. My next hand at Duncan, I don't think he's getting as far as Logan Ninefingers, to be honest.
Let's go.
So I've picked Elric of Melniboné.
Love the boy.
One of my favourite heroes we covered. I love reading about his adventures. Can Elric and Mirdemene take care of Chucky? Now, here's the problem, right? Right from the start, we have to decide what shape is Elric in? Because, obviously, Elric is a guy who gets stronger when he kills people. His sword drinks their souls, and then he will... And he gets stronger the more souls he consumes. But otherwise, he's extremely weak. Potentially even mobile. So we need a baseline of strength.
I mean, he's got Stormbringer. Let's take that as an opener. I would say he has to have the strength you see him with at the beginning of most of his stories. So he's not doing nothing superhuman, but he can, he's fully mobile. He can jump up on a horse, go for a ride.
Yeah, I feel like it's fair. He's like literally just an average man at a start, and he may get stronger if he consumes souls. And if it takes too long, then he's going to start having trouble.
The thing is, I think he's actually brilliant in this, because one of the things about Chucky is that the doll keeps getting destroyed and the soul keeps hopping to new dolls. Elric's going to stop that dead.
Yes, you're right. He's probably the best person for this round. No one has done as well in this round as since Hazel.
Like, yeah, Elric is going to just run the doll straight through with Stormbringer, and Stormbringer is going to eat that dark soul up and then move along.
And you know what? That's a really good point, and that makes me think. Now, hang on. Round two. Yes, obviously he can kill a teenager. Moving on.
I think he's actually a great person to finish off Michael Myers.
You're right. He could just kill him. He would not know that he was superhuman. He would storm in. Elric would draw Stormbringer. He would just stab Michael Myers. Michael Myers would walk onto the sword, thinking he's going to survive. And Michael Myers' soul would get eaten.
We're flying through.
Genuinely, all that would happen is Elric would be really surprised about how much power he got after he killed Mike Myers.
As he kind of like, the corpse just falls back off the blade.
I don't think Elric is willing to chop off one of his own limbs, whatever. But I also feel like this is one where he's going to cheap out, because Stormbringer could obviously just smash the chains.
I completely agree. Do you know why I think we may have issues?
So this one, he's winning by technicality.
Oh, but here's a question. Okay. Does he care enough about us to free us on his way out?
That is a good question. It really is a good question. I think what's going to happen is he's going to snap his own chain, stand up, go to leave, and will say, oh, please, won't you help me? And then he's going to give us a really cutting, disparaging... he's going to really like give us the business about, why would I save you? You're nothing to me. But then I think he probably would just save us. Like, it doesn't cost him anything. He's just going to cut the chain.
I think you're right. And then I think he's just going to swan out, though. He's not like, we're not going with him. He's then just leaving, and we've just got to keep up as best we can.
Yeah. So yeah, I feel like we are getting through Saw on a technicality. Now, Walking Dead, right?
Geordie, this is a question I've wanted to debate with you for years. Do zombies have souls?
Well, that's there's a good question. I think that going with, say, The Walking Dead, yeah, I think they probably do. But we definitely get the impression in the Elric stories that not everyone's soul has as much caloric value. I feel like Elric is getting souls from killing zombies, but not as much as if he was fighting people.
Now, next question. Is Elric watching out for us, though, on the long trek?
No. No. Here's the difference. If we were hot babes, Duncan, yes, he would take us with him all the way to Washington, D.C. But we're not hot babes.
Alas.
This might be a decisive factor for several heroes coming up.
It's the problem, you know, because even if we were the eternal companion to Elric, which we are not, you know, you've got to be useful. You've got to be funny. You've got to be quick-witted. Yep. You've got to amuse the man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you got what it takes.
I feel like I would run out of bants pretty quick if Elric was just stonewalling me.
So that's it then. We're both torn down.
We were not going to make it past for Shiny anyway with Elric. Okay, Dunk. That was a wash. Actually, Dunk, before we go any further, should we revisit Violet and
absolutely.
See how far she can make it?
So we're out of Saw, which means we're into Zombie Apocalypse with Violet. I don't think we're making it.
Now, this is genuinely a good question. Because
I don't think she can do it.
Violet's main weapon is knives, right?
Go for the head.
Knives are like the worst weapon to use against zombies.
And she's got her lightning powers, but you know what? That's very loud. That attracts the horde.
And she can't use it too often. She's got like a couple of bursts.
On top of that as well.
And
can't drive a car.
She can't drive a car.
She also, I don't think, has the most cross-country survival experience.
I agree.
She's been taught lessons.
Yeah, definitely. She's learned it in the classroom. But she literally hasn't done any, like, wilderness survival in any of the books we've seen of her so far. I'm sure she will do it. And I bet she knows all sorts of, like, special herbs, which don't exist in our world. But she would have, like, the botany skills. But I think everything really is against her. For one thing, this is where I think her disability is really going to come back to bite her. I feel like walking for days on end would be really bad on her joints. So I don't think Violet's going to make it past this round. We made a lot of hay about whether Violet would make it past Saw, but maybe she doesn't even make it past this one. And the problem is, I think this is the first person we've had who could have made it through The Shining.
I have genuinely only one person who I would trust to take me all the way. And that's, I'm going to leave them to the very end. Maybe two. I've got two people who I think generally may have the mosey for this. So, next one up, Arya Stark.
Okay. All right, this is a bit out of left field. Yeah, she is a badass. There's no question of that.
She is. She's amazing. She's quick-witted, good with a blade. She goes through absolute hell in those books. You know, she's dedicated. If we're looking at the book series, obviously we leave off and she's being trained by the Faithless Assassin. So obviously this is Game of Thrones, for the two people that don't know.
Yep.
You know, she does cross-country travel. She can fight all right. And if you go by the TV show, by the end, she can change her face. She can change her shape mildly.
She's good at jumping.
Good at jumping. Can jump up on a ice zombie. No doubt about that.
Duncan, I'm all ready for it.
So, let's run through.
Chucky. Yeah, for sure. Throws a knife at him from across the room, pins him, that's it. He's done. He's getting needled.
Scream?
Yeah, I think she's got it. Closer than normal for this round.
It's a cool fight.
You know, much smaller than Shaggy from the Scooby-Doo movies.
Now, do we survive Halloween with her? Because I don't think she's bringing down Michael Myers.
She's not bringing down Mike Myers. Like, she can do a lot because she's an assassin. But you can't assassinate Mike Myers.
This is the thing. I think Arya would survive. But would we survive?
Yeah, because she could just hide sufficiently well. But I don't think she's, even with her special assassin training, she's not going to help us hide well enough to escape Mike Myers. Unless she, like, dug a hole in the ground and put us in or something. Actually, this is a question of, like, how committed is Arya to saving us? I can't think that invested. But if she disguised herself as one of us with her face-changing powers and then led Mike Myers on a merry chase until dawn and then took him out, yeah, that would go to Arya, I think.
It would be one of those things where even the audience watching the film wouldn't know it wasn't us. And it'd be like that last reveal at the end.
This purely comes down to how committed is Arya to saving us. My experience with Arya, I didn't get far enough in the books to see her start training with the Shapeless Men. I have the impression, Duncan, that she's a lot darker and grimmer in the books than she is in the show. Do you think at that point, where she's undergone her training, she would be heroic enough to risk her life to save us? Where I'm up to in the books, the answer to that is yes. She's very heroic. She's very kind. She supports her friends.
It's a good question. I think she is. I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt. I think she still is heroic enough for that, as long as she's still being Arya. Or, on the flip side, if she's with the Nameless Men and it's like the God of Death has chosen, what do we say to the God of Death? Not today. I don't know. I really want her to get further, but I'm actually really doubting this, Geordie. I just feel it. My gut's telling me this isn't a surefire win. This is a bit of a wiggle.
I have no room for wiggles, Duncan. I'm going to say no. We're not making it through.
No. No. Oh, wow.
She would have been so good at sword. Okay. She would have chopped off her arms like that.
I don't know what her swimming's like, though. Has she ever swam?
She's committed to being a sailor, but I still don't think she'd make that one. Sorry,
okay.
Duncan.
It happens.
I'm going to go all out for this one. I feel like we have to put someone, a real candidate, to make it all the way. So I'm going to put forward one of my guys, one of my boys, one of my people I think is a genuine candidate for the greatest badass in all of fantasy. I'm going to put forward Guts.
He is a badass. If I just had to name, like, my top three badass characters in fantasy, he's in that top three. So let's start flying through. Chucky, win.
Easy.
Scream, teenager, definitely easy. Win. This guy, he is killing Michael Myers. Yes. He is dissembling him. Disemboweling him, sorry.
Dissembling?
Like, one swing of the sword, it is done.
I think dissemble is like to take down in an argument. He's going to break down the concept of Mike Myers. Yeah, Guts cannon arms Mike Myers. He gets blown apart. He's not coming back for at least two sequels.
Saw? He's breaking himself those chains.
Yeah, the saw smashed. Trap is not sufficient.
And he's
going to
protect
him.
Us.
He could just break our chains as well.
He's going to look after us. Zombie apocalypse? That's basically what this he does. Hell, demons are worse than
lightweight,
zombies.
Lightweight, easy. Barely has to get the Dragon Slayer out.
Now, Geordi.
Yes.
I think this is where it ends.
We do know that Guts' weakness is boats, but I have to point out a technicality. Now, Duncan, you're about to say, Geordi, one of the absolute last things we saw of Guts in the last time we read Berserk is he fell off a boat and immediately nearly drowned and had to be rescued because he has a metal arm.
He's done.
I have a counter to that.
Oh, come on.
I have a counter to that. I explicitly said, and this was not by design, but I explicitly said there is driftwood. When Guts fell in the water, he just fell off a boat, he was trying to save Casca, and he immediately started drowning. If there was driftwood for him to hold on to, I feel like it's a completely different story.
No, I don't. I disagree. No amount of driftwood is holding up to the fact that he's in full metal berserker armor. He's holding the largest lump of iron masquerading as a sword in all of fantasy.
He's dropping the sword.
Dropping his arm I and getting
say,
naked.
There's no... No. Listen, he's losing the sword, okay? The problem is that he has to hang on to the driftwood. He can fight with his knife. The knife would definitely take out some sharks. But I agree, he's probably not going to be able to save us and himself. I think Guts would make it till dawn for the helicopter to arrive, even in his armor if he was hanging on to driftwood, but I don't think we're making it out.
I agree with your conclusions, not all of your arguments, but fair enough. I think this is where Guts meets his end.
God damn it. The funny thing is, I think, this is a weird thing to say, I genuinely think if Guts took off the armor, he could have made it through The Shining.
Yes. I agree.
His whole life is The Shining.
He really had hope to getting it, I think, towards the end.
I should have picked Serpico. He could make it. Anyway, whatever. Duncan, it's your turn.
Right, time to up this game. I'm winning out Conan.
Old Faithful. Your favourite fantasy hero, period, full stop, I think.
I think you're probably right. He has a certain Conan the Barbarian, or Conan the Sumerian, as he is in the original stories, embodies a strong sense of independence, capability. He's quick-witted, he's adaptable. But he's also shown, at least on page, to have an incredibly high moral code. We see it particularly when he gets to his kingly years. He's dedicated to protecting his kingdom and doing right by his people. Cross-country travel he's got down. Fighting stance he's got down. The only real weakness of Conan is he likes golden women. And I think he can be easily distracted in life. Will that go awry during our gauntlet?
So, we're taking it as given. He's making it through rounds 1-4.
Yes. All the way up to Saw.
He's got Chucky to Saw. No problem. He could rip out the chains. He could help us out. He would help us if we were in a dungeon with him.
Which he does on multiple occasions.
He loves rescuing people from dungeons.
Basically a pastime. Zombie apocalypse. I think Conan has the skills for a zombie apocalypse. Like, flat out, survival, not a problem. Whether or not he takes us with him is an interesting question. I would argue yes, because I think, as we see in stories like Beyond the Black River, where he meets up with a travelling companion.
Exactly.
He he is nice to people he comes across. He's not a dick. If you can see that you embody the same morals that he does, you know, which is you try to be independent, you try to help, you're doing what he perceives as right. And if you can prove that you're useful, he's got the woodland survival down. But if you can, like we spoke with previous characters, show him how to raid a supermarket and drive a car, I think you're going to be best buddies.
Oh my god, teaching Conan to ride a car, that would be great.
No, mate, ride a motorbike. Come now, see that image.
Oh yes. All right, here's the deal, right? I agree. I think he has all the skills needed to make it. Here's the one issue, right? At a certain point, we're going to arrive at, like, a camp of survivors, and Conan is going to want to get down in there, he's going to party it up, and there's a good chance that either, you're right, he's going to get distracted and go off on a quest, leaving us behind, or we're forced to go on a quest with him, which we're not going to survive, or he's going to find a saucy wench and stay with her for a long time and kind of forget about us.
Okay, I think there's several elements here that we'd have to kind of pin down, because I think you're right. I think particularly if we came across that kind of Walking Dead evil leader of survivors, that Negan character, that governor character, who's like becoming a bit of an evil dictator to some survivors in zombie apocalypse, Conan absolutely is going on a side quest to kill them. Like, that is totally up his
no
street.
Doubt.
But if we were playing a bit of a Eugene in Walking Dead, we're going very deep into Walking Dead lore here, people, so sorry if you're not up to take the show. There's a character in that who basically lies his ass off and says, listen, I'm actually a scientist from DC, and if you get me there, I can, like, end the apocalypse. I think if we could convince Conan that, like, that was the case, he would totally get us to DC, realise we were lying, and then kill us there.
But we did it, you know?
We
qualified. If we die at the finish line, that's okay. Yes, I agree. You're right. We could, if Eugene could convince Rick that he was a scientist, we can absolutely convince Conan. Like, we know how to operate the wild iron horses. Obviously, we're a sorcerer.
What an amazing name. Yes. I think we're good.
Now, the reef. Unquestionably, this is, like, his easiest round. He loves fighting wild animals.
This is yet another round of, they're safe, they're going to put it off. Do they save us as well? And by the laws of, like, a Robert E. Howard story, the answer's no, because this is the opener, isn't it? The shipwreck. The rest of the crew die. Conan alone makes it to an unknown shore. So, that's not in our favour, but there are a few counterpoints, I think. One, if we were one of his crewmates, if we were his loyal crew, he would be invested in us.
Again, this was a fishing trip. We're on a hunting party for him, you know?
Absolutely. In fact,
again, this is another situation of if we were a hot babe, unquestionably we're making it through.
This is genuinely, if I had to, like, write this Robert E. Howard story, this is one of the ones where, like, even if we're, like, bitten, Conan brings us to shore and is, like, trying to, like, keep us alive or bind up our wounds. And that would be the story.
You're right. This is part one. Maybe we get our leg bitten off and he takes us to shore, and either we're being sacrificed by, like, the cannibal natives there, or we turn into an evil sorcerer in order to save our own life. I mean, he has to kill us at the end. But again, we made it through the sharks, so this is a W.
The Shining.
Again, I feel like this is easy for him.
The idea around this character is that he has famous vices, you know? But he also has that impeccable moral code. We say, oh, he loves treasure, but jewels are galore. In that moment, the treasure is teetering on the edge of the cliff. Mm-hmm. The young maiden is also teetering on the edge. And as the story describes the treasure chest going over the edge of the cliff and into the depths below, Conan's already running up the stairs with the maiden safely in hands. Again, if we were a hot babe, 100% no worries. In fact, probably would ignore it and we'd still be in the bedroom together. As it is, though, I don't think he's killing us.
Now, here's the one thing, and this is what we're going to get into, the classic, like, haunted house problem. Obviously, the most obvious thing to do is just leave. And I feel like with the Shining one, like, now, you know what? This is a tricky thing. is a solution to the Shining Challenge for this and future ones, hey, just leave. My first instinct is no, that's kind of cheating. But actually, the whole point of The Shining is that they do have the option to leave, but the hotel makes Jack keep them there. He breaks the snowmobile so that they can't leave because the hotel makes him. This is the book. I don't think that's in the movie or one of the movies. So my answer to this is super easy. Conan is going to get bored on day 3 and he's going to go, I want to go. Let's go. And then he's going to leave and the hotel will not be able to make him stay.
100%. This is not the man who will let boredom drive him insane. This is the man, the moment he gets bored, even if the snowmobile, by the way, we couldn't work out how to use, he'd just be like, that's fine. Let me just fashion some like snowshoes and gear from stuff around the hotel and we're going to head out alone. It'll be one hell of a trip through the mountains, but Conan will get us through it. He knows how to survive in like dark and dreary hills.
And if we're doing that little trek, I think he would probably keep us alive. I would also say this, he's going to leave before it gets that cold, you know? He's not going to wait for the middle of winter before he wants to leave. He's going to be like, I'm bored, I don't care about protecting this hotel from its boiler, let's just go. And then we'll leave, and it will still be like autumn.
We've not gotten this far yet, Geordie. Is Conan the one to make it to the end?
Can he make it past round number 8? Round number 8 is the thing.
Geordie, I think you've gone too hard.
We are at the South Pole.
Because unlike the rest of them, what's famous about The Thing as a film, horror film, is that there are zero survivors.
Well, listen, we should ask more of our fantasy badasses than a bunch of nerds down at the South Pole, right?
Right.
This is the thing, Duncan. The two ways of taking care of The Thing is, one, you just kill it, right? You're badass and cool enough to just straight up murk it. Like, if Elric was at this round, yeah, he could kill the thing. He'd stab it and drink its soul.
Yeah, you're right.
Elric's not here. He can't save us. The other way is you have to detect the doppelgangers. You have to be cunning enough to figure out, one, there's a doppelganger situation, two, not get caught off by the doppelganger situation, and three, figure out how to identify and then destroy the doppelgangers.
So, obviously, we're looking at Conan, and we're looking to his literary forebearer, Cole, who overcame the Serpent Men in Shadow Kingdom. Great episode, give it a listen.
Okay.
Which is all about this premise. Now,
that is
Conan,
episode.
In the original Robert E. Howard stories, he doesn't have to deal with Serpent Men. But in the Marvel Comics adaptation, he certainly does, and many times. He has precedent for people not being what they seem and working out who's on his side and who is not. Could Conan do this? Conan could do this. I genuinely think so. Mostly because I think he has both the cunning to try and work it out and to listen to people about how you're going to work it out. But he's also got enough of a hard line to just go, oh, it's a risk. I'm just going to burn them both in the hut.
Yeah, the funny thing is, I really thought this might be it, but the more I think about it, I can just imagine Conan killing people with fire, you know?
Absolutely.
His sword is probably not going to do the trick. He's probably going to have his first round with the with the thing and realize he can't kill with a sword, but then he's going to turn to other means, and even though we're there and I don't know how to make a flamethrower, the rest of the cast of The Thing also has to be there, and we know they can make flamethrowers and have dynamite.
I would love to survive The Thing, because I certainly don't want to die to The Thing. Of all of the creatures so far, this is, I think, the most horrific way to go.
I'm going to say one more thing, which is that. Would Conan be, like, would he care enough to try and make sure that everyone makes it through? Or is he just going scorched earth and like killing anyone who could be the thing, and that includes us?
I think he's the type of person who is going to take a rather scorched earth approach, But I can see him near the end, you know, hot wiring sort of deal. Like, we're standing out in the snow, he's got the flamethrower, and he's just literally like, tosses a knife down and goes, "You're not the thing? Cool, show me. Slice open your hand, let's do a blood test here and now, or I burn you to death. Refuse, I burn you."
You know what? I would acquiesce to you as the Conan scholar, but you know what? That's a very reasonable argument. I think he makes it.
And more importantly, we might just make it alongside him.
This is here's Duncan. We're at the penultimate challenge now, okay? It's a bit of a ramp up. Arguably not as hard as the thing, but in many ways, significantly harder. The horror movie, which Conan has to protect, lead us through from start to finish, is Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1 and 2. Can Conan protect us and our vampire baby from the army of evil vampires that is coming to Forks, Washington?
So, just a one-on-one, a vampire's fighting Conan. Now, obviously, we can sit here and debate speed and strength interpretations of vampires within the Twilight universe compared to what Conan fights. Conan is just a human being. But I think by the laws...
Could Conan defeat Dracula?
Yeah.
Yes.
For the laws of, like, a Conan story, a vampire is definitely the type of monster that Conan would handle. It'd be the big boss.
He meets a vampire in Hour of the Dragon.
He does indeed. That vampire tries to seduce him, not kill him.
Yes.
So if that's his method, I think he's going to absolutely smash it.
It. he's going to smash. Now, here's the deal. Conan versus Edward Cullen. Just as a random representation of a Twilight vampire.
The thing is...
I don't think Conan can kill Edward Cullen.
No, Twilight vampires are incredibly powerful. Like, the interpretation of their speed for, like, and their strength. Like, they're knocking... You know, aren't they basically breaking the sound barrier at certain points? They are ridiculously OP. Genuinely, I was about to say Superman. Maybe not that level, but we're getting into upper tiers of strength.
But superheroes,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, superhero strengths.
Edward can stop a truck that's, like, careening in. He's super, superhumanly strong.
Now...
Like, Edward Cullen versus Guts is like, that's a hard fight.
Here's a little counterpoint. Because Conan, in this story, Conan's is on the Cullen side. And the vampires of the Venturi are coming to take the baby.
Well done, Duncan.
Thank you. I know, I got Kryptonite wrong, but I know the Venturi. Wow.
I think...
In this scenario, though...
Now, is it... Are we the vampire baby, or do we have a vampire baby?
Do you know what? Because I don't want to go too much into depth on how we made a vampire baby. Let's just say we are the vampire baby. In this scenario, Conan's not fighting a vampire. He's directing a vampire army. He's the general.
Okay, that's fair. That was not what I had intended for this part of a challenge, but you're right. That is the premise. He has to survive, like, the story. He doesn't have to specifically fight a group of vampires. Problem we have, Duncan, is that Breaking Dawn doesn't have a climax.
No, they don't fight.
Because Alice solves the entire problem. In the movie, it's extraordinarily stupid, because... There's a gigantic battle scene, and then it's revealed to be all a dream, and then everyone goes home, and some kind of racist stereotypes of Amazon indigenous people show up. So I think we have to take Alice out of the equation, just because otherwise nothing can happen. It isn't a challenge.
So what we're really talking about here, this isn't a fight that we actually expect any of our characters to win. Maybe Guts could have done it. This is more about, can our hero negotiate? Does he have enough badassery to basically get this army of vampires to stand down?
That's I love your reinterpretation of this, Duncan. Okay, sure, yeah, can Conan negotiate a tense, hostage situation?
I don't think he can. I think this is where he
starts. Whoa, really?
No, I don't think he can do it. When does he ever negotiate a tense hostage situation?
That's a good point.
This isn't...
He's gonna spoil for a fight. The actual question is, can Conan, through his leadership, direct the Cullen and their alliance of vampires to fight the Venturi and lead them to victory that way?
I still don't think he's doing it. I really don't. I think this is his final. It's going to be an epic fight.
You're right.
It's going to be a badass final stand. But I don't think he's actually winning the day.
And you know what? I realize the reason why he's losing is that if you don't have Bella Swan, and in this case, I feel like we've removed Alice. We also have to take Bella out because I'm the baby and you're Bella, right?
Yep.
Her whole shtick is that in the last book, she realized that her magic ability is that she's a shield, and she figures out how to extend that shield over her loved ones so that they're protected from the Venturi's magical powers. And if we don't have that, we're done. We're completely out. There's no way we win.
Alas, fair Conan, you did better than all the others.
So much better than I expected.
Okay, Geordie. Fervus, that's it. We've put our flag down. Conan is the bar to beat, and I'm not going to lie, I'm not surprised. Can you updo Conan? I've got one more true ace in my hole. Who are you putting forward?
Oh, I have a couple left. All right, this is a speed round, okay? I know this guy's not making it past a thing, but I just want to bring up one of my guys, okay? Yorick Bernerson from the Northern Lights.
Oh, Yorick. Yes, I love Yorick Bernerson.
King of the Armored Bears is defending us, right?
Okay, he is defending us, and he's not worrying about the first four.
Nope, he eats Chucky, he eats the teenager, he eats Michael Myers.
He just breaks out of the chains.
Here's the thing, Yorick Bernerson could genuinely probably pick the lock.
And to be honest...
He's got those nimble little claws.
I think zombie apocalypse, we're just getting on his back. This is the safest we've ever been.
Yes! The reef? 100%! That's easy for him!
Yep. The sharks are really the ones in danger.
That's right! They're gonna clear out of there! And I think, it's not said in the book, but I'm pretty sure Yorick can probably swim in his armor.
Then you got The Shining, once again!
No problem. What does Yorick want? he's not gonna be tempted by evil.
And if we do leave, we just get on his back again! And we'll count!
Here's the best bit, right? Yorick Bernerson is the best candidate by far to survive the thing because he can survive in Arctic conditions, but he can't protect us.
It's a really tough one. Could he, you know, like cuddle us at night and via like a little tent, a little warming? Because he takes Lyra across the Arctic Circle.
Oh, he does. Oh, how far is the thing from the coast? Oh god, I really thought this was it, but no, you're right. He could probably get us away. There is a big storm going though.
But so what? He takes us far enough away the thing can't get to us. He just, you know, we're fully wrapped
up. We freeze to death!
If he was to, like, kind of snuggle on top of us though.
He can't move us and snuggle us. As nice as that would be.
I don't know. I think there's still potential. I think he could do it. Genuinely.
Alright, fine, but he can't defeat the vampires.
No. And he doesn't have the strategy for it. And he can't talk them down.
He is smart. He can't talk them down. They will be impressed by the talking bear. But they just think he was another werewolf.
Yeah.
All right. That was my speed round. I didn't expect Yorick to make it far. Can I put forward an actual candidate?
Of course you can.
I think could go the distance. I'm going to put forward Gabriel de Leon. We just did Empire of the Dawn. I think we have to put him. What's the right place to pick him? Because if we pick him at a certain point in Empire of the Dawn, and we won't get into spoilers here because you don't have had to listen to the latest episode, I feel like he could make it even past The Shining.
I think the implication is that he definitely can make it past The Shining, because the whole point, as we know, is that he can overcome his addictions eventually.
And in Empire of the Vampire, like, he makes it 11 years without succumbing to his red thirst. Because he figures out he can just drink human blood in moderation and he's fine. And if he really had to, depending on where he's at of the story, there's only a couple of points where he wouldn't be willing to do that. And the rest of the time, he would be able to get away with it. Now, let's actually take him through the order one by one. Rounds 1 through 4, yes, Gabriel De Leon can defend us all the way up to... He can break out of a saw trap, he can take out Chucky and teenagers, and Michael Myers, no problem.
Zombie Apocalypse, I'm going to tell you now, he basically, that's his book. The first book is him making it through...
That's his book.
...a zombie apocalypse, with an extra vampire sprinkled on top.
All we have to do is convince him a good reason that he has to go to Washington, D.C. The only reason he's reticent to travel with people in the first book is they're not going to the same place as him. If we convince him, hey, we just have to go to D.C., he'll take us to D.C.
Can he swim?
He has to rescue Dior from drowning several times.
Easy. Right, The Shining, as we just established.
Very hard. He'll be pushed to the edge, but here's the trick. When he would realize that we have to leave, and the hotel would try and make him stay, and out of pure stubbornness, he would then leave with us in the dead of winter with a snowmobile.
He don't like being told what to do.
Exactly. Like, he's a victim to his own addiction, but he's aware of his addiction. He knows he has to fight against it, whether it's to alcohol, whether it's to blood. And he would be like, we have to get out of here. This is a bad situation. Let's go. And we get out of there.
But how does he do against the Thing? What are his detective skills like?
I think he would be better at it than Conan. And Conan made it. Like, Conan... is not a trained monster hunter. He's an adventurer who occasionally runs into spooky stuff. Gabriel is explicitly being trained to hunt against monsters. And not even just the vampires we see in Empire the Vampire. He's been taught to fight against witches and Faken and the Fallen, which are like literal demons. So he's going to know when he's facing a shapeshifter, even though they don't appear in... Empire of Vampire, he's going to like be aware of stuff like that, even if it's just like a superstition mm-hmm. he has. He's when he comes up against stuff he's never encountered before, he's good at thinking on his feet and surviving, like when he fights the like blighted things, or he doesn't fight, he runs away from the blighted things in Empire of Vampire. He's a good leader and negotiator. We see that again and again, especially in the early parts of his career. So he's going to keep heads cool. He's going to make sure people don't come apart. And we're going to start to lose people to the Thing, but he would be able, I think, to just, like, out and out, just destroy the Thing. He's got silver bombs. He'd just blow it up.
I'm going to have to agree with you. I think he definitely has the knowledge. I think he knows how to approach a different creature. And like I said, the Thing is a monster hiding human form. Basically what vampires are. He's got this down 100%. And you know what? He's probably got the next one down.
I mean, yeah. Genuinely, this is the only person we've encountered on the list so far where the army of Venturi showing up in Breaking Dawn is actually kind of a step down from the stuff he is dealing with in his books.
If anything, I actually feel bad for the Venturi completely showing up and being like, who's this guy? Oh dear God.
The only thing that he would have against him is that for most of the book, he's not going to team up with the Cullens.
But... I think he does definitely want to protect sweet, innocent little baby children.
Gosh, damn, would he defend a vampire baby?
Yeah.
Are we failing at our own premise?
Listen.
I don't know, he might just kill us.
No. He definitely... Look at his relationship with his... In the last book, with characters like his sister and Aaron. He understands the idea that like a vampire can be good and can resist its base urges.
Oh, you're right. You're right, Carlisle Cullen is going to come to him and be like, the real evil here is the Venturi, you need to help us take care of him. And then he would do it. And he'd probably get the like indigenous werewolves to join in the fight as well.
Mm-hmm. If anything, I think he's hanging around afterwards. Okay. He's becoming dear Uncle Gabriel.
Uncle Gabe. You're right, I feel like this is the one. He is making it to the final
round.
And
I just want to be clear, he is the only one so far who... there's no negotiations, he's not clever tactics, he's just going for the brawl, and he is winning in that fight.
One-to-one with the Thing, Gabriel might become infected and have to kill himself, but if he did that, we would still make it, and that's a win. Yes, I agree. I think he could, man-to-man, take out most of the stuff in his list, and probably outthink the Thing. Final round. It has to be a big one. What's more difficult than fighting an army of vampires? It's 1954's Godzilla.
Very particular in that, aren't you? You thought that through. You're like, yep, just be clear. This version.
Well, I feel like I have to give him the chance. This is the weakest version of Godzilla, I think. Well, actually, no, 1998 Godzilla's the weakest.
Now, let's be clear.
Look, it doesn't matter. Gabriel can't kill Godzilla.
No, but that's not the requirement of this round. Gabriel has to simply protect us through a Godzilla attack.
Now.
So, let's talk about this. This video is talk about Godzilla attack. Now, I'm not going to lie, it's very convenient. I watched Minus One last night. First time. Great film. Highly recommend. Now, what happens in a Godzilla attack? It's quite a classic format. He comes from the deep. He arrives in the city. He smashes up a lot of city quite quickly.
Yep.
You know, just by walking about. He's not targeting anyone. He's just having a leisurely wander and smashing things to bit. And then after a bit of useless military firing rockets at him, he does one big atomic breath and then normally sods off again until the film's climax. That's...
Yeah.
So, it's about...
You know what?
Getting us around a city quickly, out of the way, and safely.
Let me ask a minor question before we go any further. Duncan, do you think you and us together on a holiday to Tokyo could survive a Godzilla attack?
Probably not. I think there's too much luck in it.
I think we could.
Really?
Yeah, that's the thing. It is luck. That's literally this. Because if Godzilla happens to run into you, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Like, you're done. There's no, literally nothing you can do. It's like a hurricane. Or a nuclear blast. You're done. If he goes... Tokyo's a really big place. If he goes to a part of Tokyo you're not in, you can leave Tokyo. Do you mind if I change the premise ever so slightly?
Go for it.
What if it's not a Godzilla attack? What if it's a Cloverfield attack?
Ooh.
First of all, have you seen Cloverfield?
I have. Blast from the Past.
Okay, good. So, the shtick with Cloverfield, right, is that unlike, say, Godzilla, which tends to be about a more top-down view, you're following scientists and government officials, even in Minus One, where it's much more of a human story, that dude joins, like, the anti-Godzilla task force.
Hmm.
You get more of a top-down view. It's more about how is the government, how is society dealing with Godzilla. Cloverfield is an Americanized version. It's individual. It's following a group of survivors, videoing themselves as they go across New York, place to place, trying to survive a kaiju attack. And the reason why it works is that every time you try and leave a city, Cloverfield just happens to show up to block your path. And this is again, survive till dawn, get to the rescue helicopter.
I mean, yeah, this creature is not as fun as Godzilla, but it certainly gives us a more balanced scenario to run through. Is it the Cloverfield monster? It's been a long time.
So, stretching my mind back, and I saw this like maybe 2 years ago, Cloverfield is like just the name of the like government file. So, at the start of the movie, there's a big thing on the screen that says like, oh, this is classified documents you're about to watch. It's footage found in New York after the attack, and it just, the like file name is like, it's the Cloverfield file.
Fine. Yes, let's do. We need someone who can basically get us around New York.
Yes.
It's still kind of a similar premise, except you can actually get closer to the monster and have a survival chance. If I remember rightly, the Cloverfield monster like has these littler creatures that come off of it and like attack. So you need someone who can fight off these like horrible little spider monsters, say little, big dog style spider monsters.
Yeah.
As well as.
And if they bite you, they plant an egg in you, which explodes at your back.
I mean, Gabriel was pretty good for this.
He's good at a lot of his stuff. It's going to come down to one issue, right? Is he going to get annoyed with us and leave? We're not a cute vampire baby anymore. We're us.
Oh.
Because the premise, right, obviously, Duncan, is if we're the hero of Cloverfield, the reason we stick around for too long in New York City is that we can escape, but our girlfriend, or in this case, our ex-girlfriend, can't. So if we're in Queens and our partner's in Brooklyn, we're going to tell Gabriel we have to go to the other side of the city to save my girl. And Gabriel's obviously not going to help us with that. There's one final thing. If we said we were going to do this, Would Gabriel say, well, screw it, you're on your own, I'm leaving? Or would he punch us on the jaw, knock us out, and then carry us away?
If he really thought we were useless, like we had no chance, which we don't.
We don't.
I think he would knock us out. He would see, like, well, you're just going to die anyway. I might as well save one.
I don't know. I think he'd let us die. Like, that's what he says a lot of the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really just invested in the people he likes.
You're right. And that's not us.
Yeah, if we were stupid enough in his mind to, like, put ourselves at a ridiculous risk for no great gain, like, we're not saving the Holy Grail, we're saving our partners, who the two of us love very much, would absolutely cross zombie and monster-infested New York to save. No, he's not making it out. We're making it to a bridge in Central Park to be bombed by the US government, and that's it. That's it. We're not surviving Cloverfield. /Godzilla.
So passes Gabriel. He did immaculately well.
Genuine question, Duncan. I feel like I've been way harsher than expected. I didn't expect many people to get up to or past the Godzilla stage, but I kind of hoped one person would. Do you have anyone who you think could make it?
So I've got written down three names that I haven't thrown out yet. And one I want to do quite quickly. And then I've got one who I think might be able to make it and one who I'm going to classify as a cheat. So let's hit out Geralt of Rivia.
Yes. So this feels like kind of an obvious one. The reason I didn't bring him up is that I've only read one Geralt Witcher story. So I just felt like it didn't have enough data to go on. I've read one book and watched one season of a pretty bad TV show.
I like the TV show. Let's not go into that now. I've read 5 books. So I'm 2 books away from the end of the core series. Now, Geralt. The main things about Geralt, very competent swordsman. He knows a lot about monsters and monster hunting.
Yes.
He has his mutagens. So he
knows...
Before
we go further, Duncan.
Yeah.
He's a very similar character to Gabriel. Like, Geralt is one of Gabriel's main inspirations. Mm. Is there a good reason to say he's going to go further than Gabriel?
To be honest, I don't think so. I think the only difference is Geralt is, you know, he cares about his found family, doesn't he? It's Yennefer and Ciri. Well, we're neither of them.
Yes.
The only thing that he has is that he is a monster hunter. He does fight the beast.
He can beat the Cloverfield monster?
No. I don't think we're going any further. But I think he would get to the same point, genuinely. I think if he got off his tits on mutagens, he could definitely do us a lot of good during the Breaking Dawn.
Because I've literally just going off a conversation I had with my cousin at Christmas like 4 years ago. But Witcher vampires are basically identical to Twilight vampires, right? They have like iron skin and they're super fast.
Yeah, and Geralt can hunt them.
Say no more.
You've got a silver sword, mate.
Well, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter in Twilight, but yes. I feel like Geralt's an honourable mention, right? Whatever Gabriel can do, Geralt's probably not far behind.
So, who do I really want to put forward as someone who may just keep us alive the whole way? And let's go through the stages on this. Because my last real one, and then I have my cheat, is one Commander Samuel Vimes.
Okay, alright, let's do it. Chucky, can he take care of Chucky? Samuel Vimes is from the Discworld books. He's from the Guards, the Watch books. Chucky?
I think he can handle Chucky.
No problem. Teenager with a knife?
No problem.
Mike Myers?
I think Samuel Vimes can handle Mike Myers. Because Samuel Vimes...
I haven't read all his books. I've read Guards, Guards, Night Watch, and The Fifth Elephant. I don't think he's surviving Mike Myers by the end of any of those.
Oh, he is. I've read Thud. When he gets annoyed, when he's wondering where his cow is, Mike Myers... And more than that is I think Samuel Vimes knows he's a policeman. He's a fantasy policeman. And I think he knows how to deal with a serial killer. He might be a mystical, magical serial killer with super strength, but he's still a serial killer. And Vimes knows how to get into that head, how to plan and tackle that.
Duncan, the start of the Night Watch is Sam Vimes goes head to head with a normal serial killer who has no special powers and loses in a fist fight.
It's not about fist fight. It's about keeping us safe And Sam Vimes never fails to keep those close to him safe.
You know what, that is true.
We would be close because we're innocent person.
Sort of thinking one step ahead of the bad guy, running for your life, lots of funny scenes sort of thing. But yes, with a lot of japes and maybe a bloody nose or two, we probably would make it to Dawn and escape Mike Myers.
Then we get to Saw.
It'd be very sad to see Sam Vimes chop off his own arm, but yes, I think he probably would do it.
I think he would, and I think he would do it to someone else.
Yeah,
he'd be sad. He'd be scarred. But I think he'd do it. Zombie apocalypse. And now, this man's not a big countryside. He's not a country bumpkin. But he knows how to work with groups of people, bring survivors together. It'll be a slow journey, but this is the only one who I don't think would lone wolf and cub this. As we meet other survivors, he would build a band.
That's cute, Duncan. But I don't think he would make it from Atlanta, Georgia to Washington, D.C. because he's not a wilderness survival guy. He's such a city boy. Like, that's his shtick.
Oh, are you going to knock him down? I really want him to make it, but you're right. No, you're right. That's a really good counter.
He's not making it past a reef, dude.
No, he doesn't have to learn to swim. Everyone knows the River Ank is too viscous for swimming.
You walk across it.
I think you're right.
Sorry, pal. I like it, and I he could make it past Mike Myers, but he's not making it past The Walking Dead, and he's definitely not making it past a reef.
Yeah, but he would have nailed The Shining and The Thing, and he would have done Breaking Dawn as well.
Okay, that one, you're stretching my credulity, but yeah, he would have done real well, but Guts would have done well too, and he couldn't make it past a reef for technical reasons.
Okay, I'll accept. He's too much of a city man. Okay, Jordy, over to you.
This is my last candidate. This is my guy. I'm like, no, he's making it through every round, and he might not even struggle with it. My candidate to go the distance is Luke Skywalker.
Okay.
Am I cheating? A little bit.
He's a fantasy hero. He's a bit of a badass.
He is a fantasy hero. That's the thing. Like, depending on your version of a story, he's not the most badass guy we could go for, right? He's cool. He's a cool hero. Is he a badass?
He's not in the canon, but in Legends. I'll let you have Legends, Luke Skywalker.
Here's the problem is that, like, if I was going to turn to a different equivalent badass, then I'd have to go for, like, Anakin, and he's not making it through The Shining.
No, that is fair.
Here's the real question. Because I like him more and I prefer to talk about him, is Obi-Wan Kenobi a badass?
Oh, definitely.
Unquestionably.
Unquestionably. There's something incredibly badass about the way that he sees his life get burnt down, and yet he picks himself back up again and sticks to his ideals. Okay, let's take Obi-Wan then.
Let's go with Obi-Wan. Here's the shtick, right? Not only... First of all, obviously he can take out Chucky. Chucky was literally only a challenge for Hazel. But Obi-Wan obviously can take out Chucky. Not only do I think can he take care of Scream, I think he can solve that one with non-violence. He could just talk him down, if not include some mind control.
Halloween? Out comes the lightsaber, if he has to.
He doesn't even have... He would probably wouldn't even have to. He could genuinely just, like, force push him into a wall... And, like, I don't know, put him in a box.
Hold him there. Just stand there. Take off the mask and see the whole thing collapse. Saw? Just force undo the chains?
I don't know if this is canon anymore, but in one of the Clone War comic books, he is genuinely in a Saw trap for, like, 2 years.
That's not canon anymore, but yes, he does end up in a very similar situation.
But yes, he could force undo the chains, just free us, no problem.
He's definitely going to protect us during the zombie apocalypse. Of course he is.
No question.
He can survive. He's got Jedi training.
I assume he must have wilderness survival skills, right?
We've got desert survival skills. He must get...
That's true.
He must get a basic of lots of different training. In fact, he probably has more survival skills than anyone else because he has to learn multiple planets.
Yes, but each planet only has one biome. So you just have to get one planet on lock and then you're fine.
So, the reef... Is there really a worth mentioning?
This is another one that is sold with non-violence, because he could just tell the sharks to go away.
It's Obi-Wan. He doesn't have to deal. In fact, if anything, he's giving the Shining House some therapy. He's solving the Shining.
No, you're right. Genuinely, the only thing he's doing is that he's protecting us from, like, Redrum visions. You know, we're having a bad time, and he's, like, taking us through guided meditation. You and I, Duncan, are coming out of that story a better man.
I actually can imagine him in, like, the central hallway just meditating as he slowly goes round and, like, puts all the spirits to rest.
Aww.
I know.
I don't think he can do that, but I like that. That's pretty cute.
The Thing.
Now, this is a good question.
He's got a lightsaber.
Yes, the lightsaber is going to take out the Thing. He is the shtick, right? He can read minds. He knows who the Thing is. He always knows who the Thing is. The moment that dog is walking to the station, he's going to be like, I've got a bad feeling about this.
I think you're right. I think he's got it nailed. He knows when he knows everyone's movements. He can sense them.
Now.
Breaking Dawn. Mm-hmm.
Movie Obi-Wan? I don't know if he can take out a Twilight vampire. Book Obi-Wan easily takes out all of the vampires, right? This is the classic Star Wars problem.
I would think it goes a step beyond, though. Let's think about movie Obi-Wan. What does General Grievous say to Obi-Wan?
Your lightsaber will be a fine addition to my collection? I don't know. The Negotiator!
The Negotiator! This is the only character who I think could actually do, through his psychic abilities...
Oh my god, he could do Alice shit! He could show them the future!
He doesn't have full, like, pre-sense, but I think he's the best chance who could actually just sit down and chat this out like they do in the actual story.
Okay.
Because remember, the racist Amazon stereotypes are en route, and Alice's vision is just about buying time for them to arrive and explain the situation. Obi-Wan can keep the Venturi going. Easily.
Now... I will point out that if Alice isn't here, then she hasn't found the racist Amazonian indigenous people.
Well, I still feel like he can chat them through. He can just do a mind trick. Do you really think they're that strong-willed?
Yes.
Just like...
The vampire he's talking to is psychic.
And he's psychic.
Yeah, I know, but he can't Jedi mind trick the vampires. He can't do that. Listen, I'm inclined to agree... Yes, I think, I don't think it's as easy as you're making it out to be, but I do think he could aggressively negotiate himself through Twilight Breaking Dawn Parts 1 and 2.
So we're on to the next tier.
Godzilla / Cloverfield. Not only would he be a great candidate for getting us out of a city, now he's not going to have a spaceship, that's off limits, but if we say we have to get our girlfriend from the other side of a city... He's going to be like, let's go.
I completely agree. He can cut through the little creatures. He can use his Jedi powers to, you know, clear rubble and help us make across. He'll know where the monster is, like, all the time. And he has the moral fibre to want to help us.
The literal only question is, when the helicopter is flying away and it's about to be hit by... Cloverfield, I mean, crash in Central Park, so we have to do a tearful farewell, which we videotape on our Casio camcorder. Can he stop us from getting knocked out of the sky?
Force push. Boom. Knocks the helicopter a little higher, knocks the creature back a bit.
I don't think Obi-Wan can force push Cloverfield, but I think you're right that he can, like, help fly the helicopter. He'll, like, move the control stick enough to fly us out of the way. I think you're right. He probably would be able to do that.
See, this is where Anakin would be. You'd be like, yeah, he'd just take the controls. That, you know, that's what Obi-Wan would do. He would just take the controls and use his limited sort of psychic ability to just dodge.
We're making it. That's it. We're surviving Godzilla / Cloverfield. If it's Godzilla, we will need chemotherapy afterwards, but we made it through. That's definitive. Someone made it.
Well, congratulations, Geordie. You brought a winning candidate. I do have another candidate who I think would win, but it was such a cheat, it didn't seem fun.
Would you like to just lay it out? Because if it's like, you know, Pug, who's just like, oh yeah, he just wish all of the bad guys away. Because the person I didn't bring was Aragorn, who's like, just gives everyone an aneurysm. Well, I can't give Chucky an aneurysm, but everyone else is like, aneurysm, aneurysm, aneurysm.
No, it was Goku from Dragon Ball.
Come on.
The only one that just fights Godzilla.
Here's the shtick. The Shining might be Goku.
No.
Yes, he's very easily manipulable. It's very pure of heart. But very
yeah, but not into evil.
What it could do is it could persuade Goku to be so distracted by personal training that he doesn't notice as the hotel destroys us.
Wow. I don't know enough about his character to fully counter that. So yeah, maybe I will concede that then.
It is a bit of a cheap shot to bring in Goku.
On a power level rating, I mean, we all know what his power levelers are.
Power levels are bullshit.
I think Obi-Wan is an excellent pick. And I think what's really nice about Obi-Wan coming to the top of this is the fact that he doesn't necessarily represent the traditional hyper-aggressive masculine version of like being a badass. But he's the cool, suave English gentleman version of being a badass. Yeah, the Colin Firth in Kingsman level of just...
All right, Duncan. I figured this would probably serve as a tiebreaker round. I kind of thought more people were going to make it. Granted, we were explicitly not doing people we thought were too OP and could just, like, cheat all of the rounds. However, what I kept in reserve is a little bonus round, a final test of fantasy badassery. The horror movie, which we need to survive with Obi-Wan's help, is the movie Krampus. Can Obi-Wan help unite a disunited, fracturous family and make it through the holidays whilst rebuilding our family connection?
Sorry. Oh, that is a good question. Well, let's look at the evidence. Obi-Wan's best friend has a slightly dysfunctional, fractured family. The Skywalkers. And can he bring them back together? Or does he just keep them separated? Is he really the guy? Exactly. And do you know what, Geordi?
No, you're right. He breaks up that family.
If he was able to be open and keep a family together, would a lot less... Would there not be a Star Wars? Would everything have just been okay if Obi-Wan was capable of that?
The entirety of Star Wars hinges on Obi-Wan not being aware of what his best friend in the world is going through emotionally, and the climax of the original series is him telling a son to murder his father instead of trying to rebuild a family connection, and the hero's triumph is ignoring him.
He's a great guy, Obi-Wan, but sadly, personal family matters is not his strong point.
Okay, well, I guess there is no peerless hero, but if you can think of a hero who, without just like cheating their way through like Light Yagami or something, who's not a fantasy badass, if you can think of someone who could make it through all of these rounds and then help unite a fractured family over Christmas, please let us know on our Instagram. Is this just fantasy podcast?
That is correct. You can also reach out to us on our Gmail at itsjustfantasypodcast@gmail.com and on Blue Sky at Just Fantasy Podcast.
And if you want to hear us discuss Krampus in more detail, not the movie we just talked about, we haven't even started reading the Krampus book yet, but if you want to hear our thoughts on Krampus, check out our next episode, Krampus, Lord of Yule. I've been your host, Geordi Bailey.
And I've been your other host, Duncan Nicol.
So long.
Bye.